thanks for joining us today, everyone. This is Jeff Cook. I'm a writer at Siemens focused on automotive topics. And with me today is Joe Barkai, who's an analyst, an independent industry analyst and consultant. He's also the chairman of the Vehicle IoT Committee at the Society of Automotive Engineers. And he writes and speaks frequently on topics in automotive industry and beyond. And we have, we're continuing to experiment with the audio that we put in our feed. We've have a production of a very nice white paper that Joe wrote on sort of big picture trends in automotive. And we just wanted to do a quick chat with Joe here before we present the audio. And so Joe, thanks for making time for this in your busy schedule. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So before we talk about your paper, maybe just a little bit of background on yourself. How long have you worked as an analyst and what are the industries that you cover?
So I've been working as analyst for, I might say, many years, going back to 8+ years as a global research analyst at IDC. Since I left IDC, I work on my own as kind of an industry observer. I'm trying to look at micro and macro trends and look a little bit more towards the future. So not only look at trends and lagging indicators, but really understand where the industry is heading, how technology is driving change. And I'm always interested in the unseen consequences of technology. So what are the social implications potentially? What are the things to watch for? And overall, what are the long-term impact of technology on business and on society?
Just one more question before we get into your paper. I'm curious. We always ask guests, you know, what's the impact? How is this industry changing due to all the disruptive technologies? We've not talked to an analyst yet. So I'm just curious, how has your work changed over the last decade? How's it different to be an analyst today than it was 10 or 15 years ago, given all the information that's available and just how the internet has disrupted everything?
Yeah, well, you really hit it on the head. There's a lot of information. So on the good news side, there's a lot of information, the greater transparency, greater access to information. At the same time, because the barriers to entry, if you will, are lower, there's more kind of misinformed, ill-informed information out there. So the task of analysts, I think, is to really understand what is more credible than others, how to assign a level of confidence in what we say about the future, and so on. And you know, you asked me earlier about the industries I worked in. And I think that what gives me perspective is the fact that I worked firsthand in many industries. So going back so many years, I worked in automotive, I worked in defense industries and office automation, I worked in the medical imaging industry. So I spent many years designing and building products. And that really gives me a little bit of perspective, not only about technology, but also, and I hope we touch upon this point, also about the life and the habits and the culture of those that adopt new technologies. You know, today everything is about artificial intelligence, of course, and among other things I did, I worked, I think it was about 10 or 11 years, developing artificial intelligence or AI applications. So I actually worked in this field, and I realized firsthand how difficult it is to introduce new technologies when we are not sensitive enough to the life, the culture, the habits, the workflow of the users of technology. So whereas some technologies, I think, are easier to adopt, I suspect that many of us are a bit optimistic about our ability to introduce and drive adoption of AI because, again, the human side of the users.
That's interesting. I know I sent you some questions ahead of time, but there was one question, speaking of just culture in general, maybe not adoption of when it comes to technical software, but about this technology, automated or electric vehicles. There were two points that sort of stand out about how or two things that show up in the news. One is sort of the passionate fans of Tesla and Elon Musk. I mean, that's a unique phenomenon, but the strong reaction from sort of essentially his fan base or supporters of Tesla. And number two, there are stories now of, you know, Waymo's doing its fleet of taxis in deployment in Arizona, and there are stories of the drivers being harassed and vehicles being vandalized. And so what do you make of the different reactions to the technology, just sort of among mere mortals or among the lay public, and how that's changed maybe since you've been covering the space.
Right. So certainly Tesla owners are really kind of, they're really kind of strong devotees of the brand and the vehicle itself, and therefore they are very tolerant, just like many other early adopters, very tolerant of problems, of challenges. You know, Tesla cars are not really necessarily very high quality, but the owners don't really care much. But this is kind of, it's a small community as the market moves forward and autonomous cars and electric vehicles become more mainstream. I think we'll see more of the similar to general approach to our cars. Overall, you know, car ownership remains to be a very emotional thing, much more than other products, perhaps. So Tesla, to me, is a little bit of an aberration. What was the other part of the question that you had?
Well, the other part was, you know, there's stories now about the drivers of the Waymo test vehicles being harassed in Arizona. So this technology, there's sort of the bloom is off the rose a little bit, or maybe we're just, it's interesting to see. I mean, all the optimism about what this technology could do as far as reducing congestion and improving safety and whatnot. And now, so why are people brandishing baseball bats at drivers of Google, of Waymo vehicles in Phoenix? How do you drive those two?
I think, again, it's a very typical of something that promises to be very disruptive, and society is really not quite understanding what are the benefits, what are the pitfalls, what are the challenges. I'm not really paying that much attention to it. I think it's an aberration. But you kind of ask the question in the context of hoping that autonomous cars will reduce congestion, and this in itself is not very clear, unless we turn all the vehicles or most vehicles into taxis and so on. But if electric cars and then eventually autonomous cars just replace passenger cars, we're not likely to see the decrease in congestion. In fact, there is a model called the Zahavi model that actually, and this was developed back in the 80s perhaps, and his observation was that we all have a little bit of a kind of travel budget. So we have a time travel budget. That is, we tend to take trips that last so long. So as cars are easier to drive, maybe autonomous cars, we're just going to drive longer and farther. So in a way, as supply of road capacity increases, there will be new demand to fill it. So it's not very clear that with electric vehicles will reduce congestion. So as someone said, we're going to replace polluting congestion with non-polluting congestion.
Well, that doesn't sound good. I hope.
Well, I think that, you know, what we need to drive towards, no pun intended here, but what we need to drive forward is really reduce personal car ownership. We need to drive for more public transit. We need to drive to have more on-demand vehicles filling the last and first of the last mile of travel. That's the only way to reduce congestion. So we need to reduce personal car ownership. And to do that, we need to improve, of course, we need to improve public transit.
Well, that's a good segue here into what we're going to just quickly talk about here with your paper. Your paper is a very nice paper. And for listeners, we'll certainly include a link in the show notes. And for those who want to read it, I encourage that there. Joe has many good links to other source material. And what I like about your paper is that if you spend day in and day out thinking about or blogging or writing about this, there's just so much noise. And occasionally just to step back and say, okay, sort of what's the 100,000 foot view of these big trends? It's sort of what you wrote kind of in my mind holds up pretty well through time. I don't know, when did you write the paper, Joe?
I think it was published about 6 months ago, which means I wrote it maybe 8 months ago. So I don't really expect much to change in the course of eight months in this kind of industry.
You did say, but leading in here, there's one line in your paper. So this is from your paper right on the last page. The automotive industry's attention is evolving decisively from propulsion to mobility, which is just what you were talking about. So, is there any change that sort of stands out since you first started thinking about this or doing the first draft of this paper?
Well, no, not really, But honestly, I did not expect much to change. Maybe the mindset is changing. Maybe the level of conversation is changing. But the paper deals with the really profound changes to the automotive value chain and the emerging technologies that drive those changes. And these cannot change very, very quickly. The long-term trends, such as the growing role of software electronics and the way in which the traditional automotive value chain is changing, these cannot change very, very quickly. What is driving the conversation and perhaps kind of is trying to break the status quo is the fact that many companies that are not traditionally from the automotive industry are becoming key suppliers. In a way, they dictate the direction and the cadence of new innovation. And this is very difficult for traditional car makers. So in so many ways, at least culturally, they resist those changes. At the same time, they know that they need to move forward because the narrative overall, whether it comes from people who worry about the environment to those that worry about the congestion or just those that think that autonomous cars are cool, automakers know that they need to move forward. And now they are really not in full control of the conversation anymore. The conversation now seems to be driven more by outsiders and new entrants to the industry, whether they are those that deal with the safety systems and autonomous operation and so on. So again, narrative is changing, the level of maturity in the conversation is improving, but the effects on the road are still not as far ahead as we think. But in part, as we discussed this earlier, is because the progress is depending not only on the vehicle and what's within the vehicle, but really on the outside. We need to drive community or society adoption. We need to improve infrastructure. We have to have all the services around those new mobility models. A lot of work has to be done in order for this to be adopted at the level that we can detect the change.
Related to that, so I'm attached a writer to Mentor Graphics, which is part now of Siemens PLM software. So PLM, product lifecycle management software in general, has been around a long while. On the one spectrum, it's either a commodity input to all these engineering teams. On the other end, it's a sort of key enabler of all the new stuff that we read about all the time. I'm curious, since you've been around PLM for a while yourself, so what are the unique challenges in all this automotive disruption that PLM is sort of suited to address, and whether new opportunities for PLM software or technical software vendors in general, given all the disruption?
I usually want to talk about PLM not as a piece of software, although there is software involved. I want to think about PLM as a way to run product engineering and product development, which I think was the original intent. So when we look at the new challenges in the automotive space and others, we are seeing that many of the reasons why we wanted a different way to develop products, the reason why we wanted PLM software to help us do that, we see those needs kind of coming to the forefront and really pushing the boundaries, if you will, about product development. We're looking at a very complex, multidisciplinary set of decisions that need to be made when we develop a vehicle. And by the way, this is not new. It's just the issues were around for many, many years. But now, because of the fast rate of innovation, we need to deal with this more frequently. So it's, again, it's a decision. It's decision-making concerned optimization of products. How do we weigh complexity of technology versus manufacturability of the technology versus supply chain issues? How do we test very, very complex systems that are now driven primarily by software? And to highlight this point, in the past, vehicles came in so many configurations and all of them were physical, so it was relatively easy to test a few of those or maybe even all of those, test them physically on a racetrack. Now, because so many features are software-driven and they keep changing and they keep updating them during the life of the product, there's no way to really test for all the possible permutations and variances other than by using simulation. And again, the problem is not only around the design itself. It's the manufacturability characteristics. It's the ability to update software over the air and make sure the functionality is not hurt. So said differently, we are going back to the old promise of PLM, which is to front load decisions. The idea of PLM from day one was, let's not wait until we have a physical prototype to test it. Let's not wait until we have kind of mature early models so we can test manufacturability. Let's make all these decisions and optimization decisions early in the process. Let's make them before we have a physical prototype, do everything in software. And now we are, the tools are much more mature to do that. So we have simulation tools, we have modeling tools, and the role of PLM software is to bring them all together. So to answer your question differently, the innovation and the requirements from in the automotive industry pushes the boundaries of PLM and forces it or allows it to show the benefit of using it.
So just to follow up, hypothetically, you are, a listener is a vendor of a technical software vendor of some kind, PLM or otherwise, and want to get into this market of, there's money pouring into automated vehicle and electric vehicle, startups and OEMs and whatnot. What advice do you have for a software vendor who's trying to get into the business, a technical software vendor, a vendor of design engineering or simulation tools to approach this space?
Well, the broad of opportunities and technologies is very, very, the range is very, very broad. So it's a little bit difficult to answer this directly and say, what do you need to do in order to get involved in the process? But let me step back and answer the question a little bit differently. I, as you can imagine, in my daily work, I am exposed to many new innovations and many new ideas. And then I get presentation from vendors about, new technologies and new ideas, and how they believe, the vendor believes, that they benefit the industry. What I find often is lacking is really clear statement of the use case. It's surprising how often I'm presented with kind of a new idea or new product that indeed they're really, really cool. I admit, I come from technology, so I love technology, and I can totally drool over some cool stuff. But then I ask them, so where's the value? Who will benefit from this piece of innovation or this product? And how will they benefit from this? And these sound like obvious questions, but you'd be surprised how often the conversation does not go far from the idea of, this is really, really cool. And in my opinion, cool is very overrated. And this really ties to another observation about how companies approach introducing new ideas, new technologies, or new products for the market. I continue to be surprised how little innovators and startups know about the intended user audience and their work. We touched upon this earlier when I mentioned artificial intelligence and why, in my opinion, we AI scientists of a decade ago failed. We failed because we did not understand enough the end user, their culture, their workflow. So therefore, a cool idea can easily fail, not because the product didn't do what we promised or because the algorithm was not good enough, but rather because we sort of ignored ignored the users, and the proposal was incompatible with the user needs, expectations, and workflow. And there's, I have so many examples of those areas. So I mentioned artificial intelligence, where we failed not because our AI algorithms were inferior. We failed because we ignored the users, pretty much. And a more contemporary example that I run into very, very frequently is augmented reality. Again, there's no doubt that augmented reality is really, really cool. I love augmented reality. But many of the use cases that I see, many of the scenarios that are supposed to expose the value to the users are, I'll say, insufficient, not to use stronger language.
Are you seeing, so in general, the culture about software in the automotive industry, how is that changing? I mean, there's this broad idea that the people in the top jobs in Southeast Michigan and in the car capitals, they used to be mechanical engineers and metal benders, and now there's more and more software engineers, even computer science folks, at least coming in the organizations. So how are you seeing the culture around software and electronics changing these companies?
It's changing, but not fast enough because, as you said, many of them come from different disciplines. And to too many of them, The change means only change of discipline. So we go from mechanical engineering to software engineering. And there's not enough appreciation to the new, the different disciplines, the different tools that need to be used when you think about software engineering. Some of it is very pragmatic. For example, the bill of materials that we traditionally use to transition from engineering to manufacturing, that essentially is a single list of all the different combinations. This list does not exist anymore because many of the physical manifestations of a car are expressed and controlled by software. So we have a relatively smaller, not small, but smaller bill of materials that get very, very implementations, very different manifestations at the very end of the assembly line, maybe sometimes only at the dealership or even further down the road when we turn on and off features. So this mindset is very difficult, not only for the people, but also for the software, because many configuration management software tools used in the automotive industry are not designed to recognize the fact that a single physical entity, piece of source code, can become different products at the end. The other part that is, and maybe it's more significant, more profound in its impact, is the difficulties in testing and validating software-driven components. Now the number of permutations become practically impossible to test. And therefore, we need to move more towards simulation and towards designing tools that increase awareness for product issues and customer interface issues. So it's, in a way, it's pushing quality a little bit further down the road, but we have no option to do that. So the role of development tools, the role of PLM, is really to allow us to detect issue sooner, create the rich context in which the problem occurred. And again, this context is curated by the PLM environment. And then we know what is the correct response to it.
Maybe two more questions here, and then we'll get to the presentation of your paper. So, given how long you've been doing this, both covering automotive and other industries, this is your job. You make sense of these headlines and narratives. And there's so much noise here. Give some advice to somebody else trying to make sense of the narratives and the coverage. I have the coverage. There are some good sources of information, absolutely. Though I have heard the coverage of what's going on in automated vehicles is a dumpster fire. People say that there's just so much information out there, and a lot of it is no good. And there's tons of hype and marketing hype and too many press releases. So what advice do you have to make sense of all this?
You know, it's along the lines of what we discussed earlier. We need to really understand the use case, and we need to better understand the context in which this use case is presented. It's impossible to really tell otherwise. There is no easy way of explaining this other than trying to understand the context. The way to do that is really by knowing the industry well enough to understand the industry's operation and culture, know the compliance considerations, know the value chain development. And really, this is where we often find stories lacking. But I really want to emphasize the fact that despite the fact that we have information dumpster, I sort of like the fact that the barrier to entry are lower. Yes, it allows people who are not as well informed to get in, but at the same time, it allows the public at large and others to weigh into the conversation. I don't really have a quick answer other than you need to know the industry. You need to understand how to apply the technology and the value, the promise of value within the industry. Or I say differently, the fact that one type of solution technology applied to one industry does not automatically make it fit other industries. The only way to map those is to understand what are the key characteristics of one industry and how well they map or not to another industry.
I agree with you. Again, only my experience is sort of limited to the communication and maybe the media side, but there is great information on, there are smart discussions to be had on Twitter if you are following the right people. And of course, there's lots and lots of noise and junk as well, but So it's knowing the context and taking time to curate your sources. Where do you go for it? What's your top source of information? What do you read every day? Or is there some go-to source for you?
I actually don't have a single source, so I'm not huge user of Google Alerts and so on, although I try to do that as well. To me, it's really a combination of working with the technology vendors and users and get their opinions. And yes, I'm very critical, and often I tell them people know that I often tell them that I think that they have a romantic view of the world. In other words, they know sort of how things work, but they've never been in the shoes of, say, an assembly line worker, and I was there, or they never tried to introduce an AI decision support system to a smart, experienced user, but I've done this. But still, I learn a lot from conversing with the technology vendors and their users, whether these are success stories or failures. I also attend many conferences, and I speak in many of them, to really learn about how others are thinking about the future, about technology and about the future. So even when I disagree with them, perhaps I have a different opinion, the way they position it and the way they describe it is helpful. Again, whether it's something new that I learn or something that I disagree with. And as I said, I speak frequently in conferences on technology and future of technology. And you know the old adage that if you cannot teach something, you don't really understand it well enough. So giving a talk to a very educated but diverse audience is a challenge. It forces me to think more deeply about the ideas and my observations and make them in a way that the audience can absorb and then respond. They don't have to accept it, of course, but they can respond to it. And maybe a last other comment about how at least I work. You know, there's a term in art and visual art called negative space, which is kind of the space that does not exist, but is defined by other objects or other shapes. So it could be the shadow or the reflection, or could be just an empty space defined by the boundaries of objects around it. So to me, I often pay attention to the negative space in the sense that I'm looking for what was not said, what I think is important, but nobody touched upon it. Or what are people ignoring completely when they discuss a topic, or they just, you know, they neglect to know about it. So for example, we talk a lot about technology. We talked about this earlier. So the augmented reality technology that we discussed, for decades, we talked about how cool augmented reality applications are. But the use cases where we described what they are good for totally ignored issues around safety, around knowledge required, around where the users are versus where the augmented reality tools will bring them. So I often, in that case, use a similar concept to negative space. I said that augmented reality, and by the way, many AI systems are the same, they need to focus on the knowledge gap, not on the knowledge that they deliver, but rather the knowledge gap, which is the knowledge gap between what I, as the user, know versus what I need to know in order to perform my task, to repair a piece of machinery or to design a part or whatever the case may be. So those tools need to focus on the knowledge gaps, not on the knowledge. So again, pay attention to the negative space and to the gaps, not to the main narrative. It's eye-opening sometimes.
And that's good advice. Last question here that I have asked you, since you're a technologist, you're in Boston, you're writing about mobility services. So personally, are you a user of, what's your favorite mobility service to use? Are you an avid user? You travel around a bunch of ride hailing. Have you been on a scooter yet?
No, I've not been on a scooter yet. I don't think I'm kind of ready to do that. Although, you know, you talk about the scooters and I'm not sure what I think about it yet, but all of a sudden those scooters and electric bikes to some extent are hailed as the next disruptor of personal mobility. And it reminds me some 10, 15 years ago when Segway was introduced, it was supposed to change mobility as we know it, and it didn't happen. And compared to scooters, Segways are so much better and safer. They're more expensive, but they are safer and easier to drive. And I'm kind of, I need to think some more about why Segway did not succeed and why do we think or something that scooters will be the next thing of in personal mobility. So no, I don't use scooters, but I use ride hailing a lot.
No, you're right. If you take the arguments that I can't remember the founder, is it Dean Kamen?
Dean Kamen, yep.
They map directly to what all the micromobility advocates say today. So it is interesting how that works.
Yes, and Segway is no doubt better, safer than scooters.
Just to close here, so where, I see you're on Twitter, you have a blog. Where would you direct folks to go to learn more about you, to follow you, read more of your writing? Where would you point people to?
So the best way to find my writing is in my blog. The website is joebarkai.com. And it also, by the way, has a calendar of my public speaking events, so people can find me there. And I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm always happy to get comments, suggestions, and especially observations about what I write. So again, I can enrich my point of view and add more, hopefully, value to my readers.
Great. Well, Joe, thanks for your time today, and thanks for allowing us to present your paper in audio format. I hope you find some new audience that way. So appreciate all that, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
And now, here's Joe Barkai's paper on the car of the future, presented by the team at Jenny Media.
The car of the future. Electric, connected, and autonomous. The impact of vehicle electrification and connectivity on electrical system design. An article by Joe Barkai. This article was sponsored by Siemens PLM. Industry in flux. Just over 100 years ago, Henry Ford disrupted the auto industry of the time with the introduction of the mass production moving assembly line. To say that the auto industry is again in flux is almost a cliche. Several technology and business transformation trends are in play, signaling substantial long-term changes. Although still in early stages, their confluence is already having a profound effect on automotive companies and the future of the mobility landscape as a whole. Electrification. Many consumers recognize the value of electric vehicles in reducing environmental impact. A survey from AAA shows that 20% of drivers want an electric vehicle and will likely choose an EV for their next vehicle, up from 15% in 2017. However, limited travel range of today's electric vehicle and their high purchase cost, even when considering tax relief, which will eventually be phased out, erect tall barriers on the road to broad adoption. Today, less than 5% of vehicles sold in the US use electric propulsion. While US buyers remain somewhat tepid about electric vehicles, China's electric car market is booming, growing twice as fast as the US, aiming to meet air quality standards by 2035. China is driving large-scale transition to EVs through market initiatives, charging infrastructure, and strict policies. By 2022, the combined sales of EVs and internal combustion vehicles in China will represent over half of global car sales volume. The Chinese auto market represents an enormous market opportunity for American and European OEMs that are investing heavily to seize the opportunity, and so do many startups. AngelList lists nearly 600 electric vehicle startup companies in the US, with an average evaluation of $4.2 million. But competing with dozens of indigenous Chinese OEMs and suppliers and gaining market share, especially in the non-luxury vehicle segment, is not going to be easy for foreign manufacturers. Autonomous driving. The race to achieve fully automated driving is heating up rapidly, although all contenders are still far from the finish line. Despite many uncertainties concerning technology maturity, regulatory requirements and market adoption, practically all automakers and major suppliers, as well as scores of small upstart companies, want to take part in this race. The path to building affordable and safe, fully automated vehicles and to gaining both regulatory approval and mass market adoption is going to be long, and the timing and magnitude of realizing returns on hefty investments in developing autonomous systems are uncertain. Nevertheless, the upside of market leadership in this space is lucrative enough. The ability to capitalize on the early waves of commercialization and consumer adoption and the accompanying boost to the brand continue to drive massive investments in R&D by both automotive companies and outside investors. From 2011 to 2016, R&D investment in the automotive sector increased by 33%. Furthermore, typically fiercely competitive OEMs are seeking new partnerships and collaborations to leverage this industry-wide momentum. Connectivity. Internet-connected infotainment systems are platforms for delivering an increasingly rich set of content and services to drivers and passengers. While OEMs have been offering connectivity, telematics services and infotainment systems for many years, monetizing these services continue to be weak. But this is about to change. Today's consumers demand connectivity, sophisticated mobile apps and rich online content. An Auto Trader study shows that connectivity is becoming an important factor in car buying decision. According to this study, 48% of car buyers prioritize in-vehicle technology over more traditional considerations such as brand name, body style, and performance. In the past, OEMs offered sophisticated head units and brand name high-end audio systems, but these were mostly available in high-end models, assuming luxury car buyers will be willing to pay a premium for high-tech features and expensive annuity-based services, a model that has seen only moderate success. Today, as the Auto Trader study shows, 56% of car shoppers, especially the under 35 demographic, know exactly what in-vehicle technology they like and are less willing to compromise on the features they want. Realizing this demographic shift, OEMs are moving to better align the value proposition to demographics by adding connectivity and in-vehicle features across their portfolio, including their non-premium brands. Smart mobility. In-vehicle systems, car connectivity and electrification pave the way for innovation in smart mobility. Optimized traffic management, all electronic parking and tolling, and alternative models for vehicle ownership and usage, such as car sharing and e-hailing, are still in early stages. But users in urban areas, again primarily the millennial population, are quick to experiment with and adopt new ideas and are shaping the evolution of new services and business models. The inflection points in many of the emerging smart mobility initiatives rely on external factors, such as advances in autonomous driving, infrastructure development, retail systems, and numerous other factors. And with theme, pressing new questions and concerns about operational safety, data security, and consumer privacy. While new business innovation may take some time to evolve and mature, the general trajectory is clear and promising, and companies are investing heavily to establish a leadership position and capture early beachheads. Globalization and personalization. Globalization and changing demographics are forcing OEMs to innovate differently. In-vehicle software-defined systems allow automakers to offer a wide range of features to better meet market demand and cater to the ever-changing tastes and whims of customers across different geographies and age groups, and help create and bolster brand differentiation. The ability to tailor functionality seemingly effortlessly to markets and demographics at minimal manufacturing cost is tempting for marketers and design engineers alike. Driven to outdo the competition, automakers rush to implement new performance, comfort, and safety features. Some creative marketers and industrial designers envision a configurable and customizable dashboard that ditches most hard buttons in favor of an iPad-like console and augmented reality-enhanced information, an idea many engineers eschew. But one thing is abundantly clear. Electronics and software are defining the competitive battleground of the future. A century-old status quo is challenged. The convergence of electric propulsion technologies, advanced control systems, and pervasive connectivity is enabling a wave of exciting creativity and innovation, not only in core vehicle functionality and operational safety, but also, as importantly, in novel business models and customer engagements that are shaping the future of personal mobility, public transit, and commercial transportation. Software-based functionality and low-cost off-the-shelf sensor electronics lower the barrier to entry, creating opportunities for new entrants that move the competitive battlefield to grounds unfamiliar to traditional automakers. In particular, artificial intelligence, AI, machine learning, signal processes, and similar highly specialized fields are at the forefront of technology development for advanced driver assistance systems, ADAS, ADAS, and automated vehicles. We are in the beginning of a radical mobility revolution that will continue for the foreseeable future. We are going at breakneck speed on a road awash with uncertainties and unknowns. Winners are those that recognize challenges and innovate and adapt quickly. For new entrants, this vast landscape of opportunities to leapfrog traditional automotive companies and establish a foothold in a traditionally highly impervious industry. Everything is up for grabs. Technology innovation, disruptive customer-centered business models, and even challenging the deeply ingrained retail practices the way Tesla did it. Upstart companies are forcing traditional OEMs and suppliers to push the envelope and adopt innovation in areas where, in the past, they did not envisage and at times refused to consider. A good example is Tesla's remote software updates. Despite popular belief, Tesla did not invent this technology, which has been widely used in the telecommunication industry. Auto OEMs rejected the idea because of concerns that remote updates will reduce dealership visits and hurt service revenues. Dozens of new entrants are driving innovation and are challenging traditional OEMs and suppliers to keep up. According to McKinsey, the majority of investment activity has targeted companies located in the United States, more than half of which are in the San Francisco Bay Area and not in Detroit. This report also ranks Israel and Singapore third and fourth after the US and China in terms of the number of emerging mobility technology companies and disclosed investments. These countries are outperforming India, Germany, Japan, and South Korea in terms of innovation momentum, a fact that is especially telling since these countries do not have traditional car manufacturing industry. Suppliers are no longer just suppliers. Rapidly emerging vehicular technologies are shaping the future of the automotive value chain. Once mostly indistinguishable in a pool of dozens of similar companies in the supply chain, new suppliers are in control of the hottest technologies. They are taking a central role in the automotive value chain and are restructuring to move up the value chain. They are changing the rules of the game to move up the value chain, causing disintermediation and disrupting the status quo. One of the more profound changes is taking place in the semiconductor sector. According to NASDAQ, in 2017, the automotive sector represented only 9% of the overall semiconductor market, far behind the telecommunication and computer industries, which together made up nearly 60% of the market. However, the report also noted that automotive is the fastest growing sector and was expected to grow 22% in 2017, followed by 16% growth in 2018. We're evolving into a provider of services for road users to come up with new concepts for mobility. We are also reviewing our conception of Bosch. Rolf Bulander, Chairman of Bosch Mobility Solutions. New entrants are not just suppliers of core mobility technology. The top five investment areas, according to the report, are ride-sharing solutions, autonomous operation, user interface technologies, sensors and semiconductors, and cybersecurity. New automakers rising. Tesla is well recognized as the auto company that managed to challenge and disrupt the hegemony of traditional automakers and is making rapid progress towards bringing autonomous vehicles to market. Tesla succeeded where others before it had failed and showed that traditional OEMs are not invincible. But other companies attempting to emulate Tesla in the US and other mature markets may not be as successful. In emerging markets, especially in China, the number of OEMs is growing rapidly. Free of the legacy of the past 100 years, Chinese OEMs are laying the foundation for expansion by acquiring global brands and targeting autonomous and electric vehicle technologies. There are over 100 passenger car brands available in China from local automakers and joint ventures with global OEMs and suppliers. Although the ambitions of these manufacturers are mostly regional, they represent a real threat to global OEMs coveting the lucrative China market, which is growing by an average of 7% year over year and is expected to reach an annual sales volume of 25 million vehicles by 2020. Complexity outpacing capabilities. Automobiles have always been an assemblage of mechanical, electrical, hydraulic, and pneumatic subsystems. These systems were unsophisticated, and their integration was sufficiently straightforward that they could be designed, prototyped, and validated using commonly used mechanical engineering methods. Automotive design engineering began experiencing a major shift in the 1980s. As advanced vehicle electronics and embedded control software were introduced into cars to handle increasingly stringent emission regulations. Modern vehicle control systems are no longer just a limited number of loosely coupled subsystems with simple interfaces. Nowadays, embedded control and user interface software govern practically all aspects of both vehicle operation and driver experience. They are large-scale software-controlled concurrent and distributed systems with complex system interactions that are difficult to simulate and test thoroughly. Computers on wheels? Software is everywhere. The expression "a modern car is just a computer on wheels" may be a gross generalization and oversimplification that ignores the large number of mechanical parts and subsystems responsible for everything, from suspension and steering to passive safety, but the general sentiment is important in itself. Modern cars are loaded with advanced electronics and complex software systems that control active safety features, steering and braking systems, and the car's infotainment and communication equipment. As importantly, software-based systems and interfaces define the user experience of the drivers and other car occupants. Weighty innovation. Vehicle electrification and connectivity are responsible for the richness and robustness of safety features, infotainment systems, and overall driving and ride experience. They are also responsible for some side effects that perhaps weren't anticipated fully. One of the more significant side effects is the increase in vehicle weight. An electric car is about 30% heavier and 70% more expensive than a compatible internal combustion vehicle. Although at some point in the future, ADAS, ADAS, and automated driving will reduce the need for heavy passive safety features and the use of light materials, and additive manufacturing methods will contribute to further weight reduction. Today, EV manufacturers must seek to design trade-offs between the innovation and the additional weight tax and its impact on vehicle travel range. Traditional methods and tools are strained. As automakers focus on designing complex electronic systems and control software, it is becoming clear that legacy engineering systems and methods are no longer adequate. Design engineering and test environments continue to rely on decades-old product engineering and supply chain methods, processes, and tools that, by and large, have not kept up sufficiently with new engineering disciplines and the growing complexity of systems development. Disparate mechanical, MCAD, and electrical, ECAD, design tools, and a myriad of software configuration tools built around open-source tools such as Bugzilla, Eclipse, and Emacs are no longer able to support the intricate dependencies across electrical, mechanical, and software designs. often propped up by spreadsheets, XML file exchanges, and email communication, this fragmented engineering environment does not provide the level of transparency, traceability, and quality management needed to manage changes and updates throughout the design lifecycle. We see more change in the next 5 years than there's been in the last 50. Dan Amann, president of General Motors, and several others. Change is inevitable. The impact of the transformation the industry is undergoing is overwhelming, and the cumulative long-term effects of rapid technology innovation, disruptive business models, and evolving supply chain ecosystems is probably not fully comprehended yet. Nothing in the traditional automotive business, which has remained relatively unchanged for many decades, is safe anymore. Everything is fair game, and OEMs are at a risk of no longer being the masters of their destiny. The automotive industry has relied on internal innovation, manufacturing expertise, and complex supply chains as barriers against outsiders. These may not always be sufficient going forward. The imperative to mature and reskill is not limited to the engineering department. New vehicle technologies also impact on downstream activities, such as dealership service technicians that must learn to troubleshoot software-based control systems. High-voltage systems in hybrid and plug-in electric vehicles are a particular challenge for both service technicians and first responders. Software and electronics development as a strategic capability. Developing software for the earlier generations of software control modules, which started as early as the late 1980s, wasn't a very onerous task. OEMs and suppliers managed through the process with small teams using rudimentary software engineering environments, supplemented by ad hoc use of multiple spreadsheets and lengthy email threads. But software has grown in both volume and complexity, and evolved from controlling electromechanical subsystem to becoming the key differentiator for the customer experience. By some measures, software is now the dominant component in vehicles, and its importance continues to increase. 80% of product innovation and differentiation now electrical, electronics, and software. Sigmar Hassis, Daimler R&D CIO. Developing reliable automotive software has become burdensome for OEMs, as is evident by the increasing number of software-related vehicle recalls. J.D. Power's Safety IQ reported that the number of technical service bulletins, TSBs, pertaining to software issues increased from an average of 58 recall incidents per year between 2006 and 2010 to an average of 160 recalls per year from 2011 through 2015. Shortage of talent. During the depths of the Great Recession of 2007 to 2009, American auto industry employment fell by nearly a quarter of a million positions. Today, the auto industry is in full recovery mode, and unit sales are fast approaching pre-recession levels. But the ability to sustain and accelerate this growth is being threatened by shortage of viable workforce and skills gaps in R&D, engineering, and manufacturing. Talent recruiting and retention is a particular issue for companies that must branch out from their traditional core competencies and develop expertise in new technologies. Fierce competition, rush to market, one-upmanship culture, and workforce shortage are most pronounced in electronic and software design, to the point that allegations and lawsuits about talent poaching and IP infringements are becoming frequent in already talent-strapped areas, such as Silicon Valley. The rise of the electric vehicle over the next 10 years will create demand for different kinds of engineering skill sets compared to the traditional skills seen within the automotive sector. Les Hewlett, Director Automotive, MatchTech. A new era of PLM. Automakers use product development methods that have been honed for decades. They have optimized supply chain operations and lean practices, perhaps more than any other industry, and over time became accustomed to a certain cadence of product development, manufacturing, and product introduction. The Integrated Electromechanical Design Imperative. The fragmented IT architecture and inflexibility of legacy product lifecycle management, PLM systems, make it hard to scale across the enterprise, hence the widespread use of spreadsheets and accompanying lengthy email threads and contentious meetings to connect disparate processes and plug information gaps. Automakers must adopt a systems engineering orientation that unifies the lifecycle management of mechanical, electrical, and software disciplines to allow design decisions, trade-off analyses, and engineering optimizations to flow seamlessly across domain boundaries. The electrical, mechanical, and software design processes should be connected, integrated, and collaborative. Electrical and electronic design teams need to work seamlessly with their mechanical and software engineering counterparts from the start of the development process in order to accelerate design and integration testing and identify conflicts early when changes are easier and less costly to implement. For instance, cross-domain conflicts such as weight reduction, thermal management, and EMI shielding should be identified and rectified during design and early validation, lest they become too difficult and costly to rectify. An integrated approach requires tight integration of both process flow and data exchange between MCAD, ECAD, and software development tools for an optimized workflow and to reduce wasteful and error-prone data duplication and manual data exchanges. The integrated design environment and workflow will not only improve efficiency and reduce the negative impact of late discovery, but is also likely to promote cultural changes, encouraging design engineers to collaborate, employ organizational best practices, and indeed, be more productive and innovative. The digital thread. Today, more than ever, product lifecycle management software fulfills a critical role as the main repository of product information that connects users to critical information and supports collaboration across all disciplines within the extended enterprise, from design to manufacturing and to in-service, using shared models within a single product development environment. PLM is emerging, again, as the product innovation platform to model and manage all logical connections between requirements, design information, simulation results, test data, and other product lifecycle artifacts. The product innovation platform provides through-life management of product configurations, designs, and processes. PLM orchestrates requirements, design, and verification activities among the different engineering disciplines of automotive design and manufacturing. It allows stakeholders to navigate through and understand the relationships between design activities and representations from multiple disciplines. It encourages parallel development and synchronization between different design and testing activities that operate in different cadences: electronics, printed circuit board and wiring harnesses, software and mechanical design. A common PLM platform enables uniform access to authoring tools and exchanges information with enterprise systems, automates manual processes, and provides migration and translation from legacy systems, with integrations for enterprise software systems such as PDM, ALM, CAD and ERP, CAD and ERP. This next-generation platform connects all users into a single set of information and processes. PLM as an innovation platform must remain open and able to integrate multiple objects, data types and processes in a way that curates rich multidisciplinary context and enables front-loading key decisions requires extending the semantic model of PLM software. Still, while companies should show low tolerance for data silos, must work to establish processes that leverage a common platform. Eradicating fragmentation completely is probably unattainable, in part because of the broad set of methods and tools used by the engineering team, and in part due to new value chain participants in product lifecycle management process and practices. Some notions, such as the Internet of Things, are truly newcomers, whereas others, for example, service lifecycle management, SLM, are not necessarily new, but are finally claiming their rightful role in the product value chain and demand to be incorporated into early product lifecycle decisions. There has never been a more exciting time to be in automotive. Rebecca Fifelski, Executive Director, Global Engineering Operations, Visteon. Prepare for the future. The auto industry's century-old push to gain efficiencies, accelerate output, reduce waste and recoup working capital through lean techniques means it's always looking for better ways and new technologies that can fine-tune their already well-established supply chains. However, in the past, the strong bias towards inside innovation limited its options and slowed down responsiveness. On the other hand, electronics manufacturers, the new kings of automotive supply chain, are accustomed to rapid innovation cycles and dealing with unaccepted market changes and demand fluctuations. They have long-standing close relationships with suppliers and make frequent use of outsourced contract manufacturers to meet demand variation and short life cycles. These companies are moving to the forefront of automotive innovation. Automakers and Tier 1 suppliers are facing disruption and value chain disintermediation caused by these new entrants. As the suppliers of the platform and market channels, OEMs still control the narrative and the cadence of innovation. But the barriers to entry continue to plummet as innovation's center of gravity is moving from complex, highly engineered mechanical systems and passive safety features to simpler yet powerful hardware controlled by sophisticated electronics and software. Yes, there's a lot at stake. Yes, there's a lot of uncertainty. But this is not a time for the conservative or the cautious. Carlos Ghosn, Chairman and CEO Renault, Nissan and Mitsubishi Motors. Manage uncertainty. Growing and protecting market share will require automotive companies to anticipate market trends faster and to exploit new mobility business models more efficiently. They must be able to embrace disruption and be able to adopt new business and technology innovation to address rapidly changing consumer preferences across demographics and regions, especially in light of increasing urbanization. Leverage partnerships and ecosystems. The automotive industry's attention is evolving decisively from propulsion to mobility. This transition is not even and will take decades to take shape. While the outcome of this transformation isn't necessarily clear, successful mobility companies will leverage partnerships and open, scalable ecosystems across and beyond the industry boundaries we recognize today. Although electronics and software are becoming the foundation for market differentiation and competitiveness, driving OEMs and suppliers to keep their cards very close to the vest and keep key technologies in-house, they should consider developing select vertical partnerships with preferred suppliers, allowing them to cut R&D costs while developing and implementing new features faster. Transform the organization. As the entire automotive industry is undergoing transformational changes, product organizations must also transform and modernize century-old thinking to be better equipped to address the new challenges in product development. Some methods and practices that have been for decades may not suffice anymore, and some of these have been in place for so long that organizations will find it difficult to wean from and evolve swiftly to tackle the challenges of 21st century automotive manufacturing. Automakers need to invest in realizing integrated processes and tools environments that allow, and in fact encourage, the mechanical, electrical, and software domains to intelligently collaborate to ensure first-past success, while reducing cost and time to market. Automakers should focus on enhancing product lifecycle thinking, enabling a digital thread of information and decision-making processes that allow all stakeholders to gain accurate and unbiased insight and drive better product design, supply chain, and customer-facing decisions. Joe Barkai is an independent industry analyst and consultant. He is also the chairman of the Vehicle IoT Committee at the Society of Automotive Engineers, SAE International. He writes and speaks frequently on technology and business trends in the automotive industry. This podcast was narrated by Emma Clark.
That was Joe Barkai's paper entitled The Car of the Future, Electric, Connected, and Autonomous. Thanks to Jenny Sarasvati and her team for the production. Subscribe and let us know what you think of the podcast by rating and reviewing it on iTunes or whatever is your podcast app of choice. I'm particularly interested in what you think of this format as we continue to experiment here. We have more interviews coming up as well, also a variety of audio, including excerpts from conference panels. I'm Jeff Cook. Thanks for listening.